We're holding on Yud Beis Amud Beis, the first Mishnah. Now that we talked about, the previous Mishnah had talked about the differences between the Gemara, and it had talked about the differences between the Kohen Mashiach Melchama and the Kohen, sorry, between the Kohen Mashiach and the Kohen Merubah Begadim, the Kohen who's been anointed with Shemen HaMishcha versus the ones who were appointed by wearing the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol, which the Gemara had explained in detail yesterday. There came a point when the Shemen HaMishcha was hidden away, the Aron was hidden away by Yeshayahu 30-odd years before Churban Bayis Rishon, along with it went a number of things, one of them being the Shemen HaMishcha. From then on, Kohen Gadolim were appointed just by wearing the eight big kahuna of the Kohen Gadol and performing the Avodah. So we talked about the difference between them as far as the power Kohen Gadol that we've been discussing in throughout this Masechta. And then we talked about the difference between a Kohen Meshamish and Kohen Sha'avar, the Kohen Gadol who's currently in office versus one who temporarily was in office when the regular one was possible or unavailable. So now talking about some differences between a Kohen Gadol and a regular Kohen. Many of these actually there was a Braisa earlier on this onward that lists them, but here you have a Mishnah that lists them, that lists some of them, and the Gemara is going to discuss it. So the Mishnah says, Kohen Gadol Poda Milamata. Now, if a Kohen Gadol's relative passes away, so unlike a regular Kohen, he can't become Tomei for them. And he actually, the Kohen Gadol does not even interrupt his Avoda for it. We learned that the Gemara had mentioned yesterday that a Kohen Gadol, unlike a Kohen Hedyot, is allowed to offer korbanos even while he's an owner and even while his relative has passed away and hasn't been buried yet. So when he tears kriya, podim, when he tears his clothes, he doesn't tear them from the top, from the top like we do, like nowadays is done, for example, at the collar or something like that. Podim milamata. He tears his clothes only from the bottom hem. The hedyot milamayla, whereas a kohen hedyot would tear his clothes for kriya from the hem or from the collar or whatever, like a regular, like anybody else. Another example in this connection, kohen gadol makriv oinin, a kohen gadol is allowed to bring the korbanos even when he's an oinin, veloy oichel, however he doesn't eat from them, which is the whole thing you have in Parashat Shemini, when Nadav and Avihu passed away, and Moshe tells Aaron and his sons, because temporarily that day his sons also had the greatness of a Kohen Gadol. He tells them you have to continue doing the Avodah, even though you would normally be an Avelus now. And then afterwards you have the whole thing where they burnt one of the Seirim and Moshe is upset with them and Aaron explains that it's Kodesh Shah, it's Kodesh Dodas, it's a korban that's going to be brought every month from now on and we don't have the right to eat it as Onanim. So there we see that whole point that a Kohen Gadol is able to be makriv when he's an onan, but he can't eat the korbanos. Whereas a kohen hedyot cannot offer the korbanos when he's an onan, and he can't eat from them either. So the Gemara says, when we talk about this matter of the Kohen Gadol doing klima, tearing his clothes for a mess, we said below and above. So what does that mean? So we said that it means the bottom hem, but that's actually only according to one opinion. So Omer Rav, lamata lamata manish. So Rav says that the word lamata, that the word lamata in our Mishnah means literally at the bottom hem. Lamaila means lamaila mamish, and the word lamaila would mean literally the top hem, the top hem, the collar, the whatever, like is done nowadays. Shmuel says no. Lamata doesn't mean the bottom hem of the garment. Lamata would be lamata mikame sofa. It just means below the actual hem of the garment. So in other words, instead of starting at the edge of the garment, instead of stopping at the top edge and ripping down from there, instead he makes a rip in the middle of the cloth, a little bit below the collar. So the collar itself is not torn. The Rosh points out it still would be in the front. It still would be the reason why we use the word the lamata mi sofa. The Gira says it's supposed to be actually lamata mi kame sofa. Kame sofa literally means the front edge, and then the Rosh points out that still teaches us it does still have to be in the front like anybody else. So yes, so the matzah, so yeah, it's not an item of girsa. It says right here, it's a little further down, that's missing the word kame, but here it has. Lamata means lamata mikame sofa, lamayla means lamayla mikame sofa. The word kame sofa means the front side of the garment, but below the collar. Vizev is ebetzavra, but Shmuel says both of them mean that it's near the neck. So the Gemara says, mesvi, I have a contradiction on Shmuel. A braita says, I'll call on mesim kulon, when it comes to when it comes to any other relative of his who passed away, for whom he has to say a kriya, rotza mavdo kame sofa shaloi, rotza ene mavdo kame sofa shaloi, when he tears kriya, he doesn't have to tear the actual hem, the actual edge of the garment, and going down from there. He could choose instead to do a rip in the middle of the garment. But when it comes to his father or mother, then he has to actually tear from the edge of the garment. So the point being, in other words, that we see that a regular person, the question is, kiven dema alma havi kera, the question is, if for a regular person such a thing is considered kriya, kodikanu, god of la yifrem, don't you have to apply here? After all, the pasuk says about the kohen gadol that he doesn't tear his clothes. So meila, like Rav, you're going to say it means he shouldn't tear his clothes like a regular person does. A regular person never tears kriya on the bottom of the garment, only the top. So therefore, now the kohen gadol, by tearing near the top, by tearing at the bottom, is doing that. He's not doing what regular people do, and therefore he's mekayim what it says in the pasuk. But if Shmuel is saying in both cases he's tearing near the neck, the difference is just in one case he's ripping through the edge of the garment, and in the other one not, then that it comes out that both of them are valid forms of kriya. The difference is just one for parents, one for everybody else. But then the kohen gadol is still being over. He's still doing something which otherwise would be a valid form of kriya. And the answer is Shmuel Rabbi Yehuda Svirale. The answer is Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda, who disagrees with that brisa. The Omar and Shmuel says Kol Kera She'enim Mavdol Sofa Shalai. Any kriya which does not rip through the edge of the garment, kame sofa, like we said before, ene el kera shel tiflus, is only a kriya of foolishness. The person is not actually accomplishing anything with it because that's not kriya. So Rabbi Yehuda, in other words, so here the Braisa had said that for other relatives, a person could tear but kriya, but not divide the, not split the actual collar, and only for father or mother. Does he have to? Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that and says for other relatives as well, he has to split through the collar. So Shmuel holds like that. So therefore, for him, there's no that not doing that is not considered kriya. Therefore, good, a kohen gadol can do that. So the Gemara asks him, "Mi isla the Rabbi Yehuda kriya b'kohen gadol?" So does Rabbi Yehuda b'chalal hold of the concept of a kohen gadol tearing at all? That you could say that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda. V'hotanya, we learn in a brisa, ilu nemar roish lo yifro veged lo yifraim. If the pasuk had said by the kohen gadol, the head he should not grow the hair long, and the garment he should not tear, without saying his head or his garment, you would say it doesn't apply to him at all. What it means, b'roish u'beged shol soita hakos v'dabra. The pasuk is telling you about the head and the clothing of the soita. We know that when part of the soita process is that her hair is uncovered and messed up and disheveled, and her clothing is ripped. So now you would think the pasuk is telling you the kohen gadol should not be the one to do that. Talmud Lema. Therefore, the pasuk says with the vavs roish es roish shoy la yifra of god dov la yifra. It doesn't refer to somebody else's, such as the soita's. It means his own head and his own clothing. Lema. So that teaches us she'ena b'kriya prima kol ikar. So he does not in the category of priya of growing his hair long or primo or tearing his clothes kol ikar at all. Give it Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. And by the way, this that we're saying that it doesn't mean that he doesn't do the soita. There's actually Rishalmi in Sota that says, now when they have to uncover her hair and they have to uncover parts of her body, and it would be which Koyan is supposed to be doing it. On the face of it, any Koyan who volunteers to do it might be doing it because he wants to be close to this woman and then have Hirurim because of her. So the Rishalmi actually says they would make a lottery among the Koyanim who are there, and whoever the lottery came up on, even if it was the Koyan Gadol, would go ahead and do that. So that way there's no concern that anybody is inappropriately volunteering for the job. The point being, in other words, we see from that the Kohen Gadol would actually do it, which fits with what we're saying over here, that the Torah is not saying that the Kohen Gadol should not do it. Rather, the Pasuk is telling us that the Kohen Gadol should not grow his own hair long or tear his own clothes. Anyway, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Shmuel, I mean, Rabbi Shmuel says, "Ain't a purim kederach shabnei adam purim." He doesn't tear his clothes the way that regular people do at the top edge. Elohu milamata vahedit milamayla. Rather, he tears from the bottom edge, and everybody else tears from the top edge. So we see, in other words, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the kohen gadol doesn't rip his clothes at all, not even from the bottom edge. So what are you telling me that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda? And says that he does, in fact, tear near the top edge. He just doesn't tear through the edge itself. And the answer is, Shmuel, Sava Laka Rabbi Yehuda B'chada, or Pala Galei B'chada. The answer is, Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yehuda only in one matter. So he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that in order to be Yotze Kriya, a person needs to tear through the actual edge of the garment. The top edge for most people. And then, on the other hand, so with that he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, not just for a father or mother, but for any close relative, a person has to do that, tear through the actual edge, the top edge. On the other hand, he disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda, who says that a Kohen Gadol doesn't tear at all. In that, he holds like Rabbi Shmuel, that the Kohen Gadol does tear just from he doesn't hold like Rabbi Shmuel, actually. So his is now a third opinion that would say he can't tear the bottom edge. He does need to tear closer to the top, because that is what normal Kriya is. However, he can't tear through the edge, because then he'd be violating what the Torah says to not do Kriya. So instead, we do kind of like almost like a compromise. He tears near the top edge, but not going through the actual edge, just further down on the garment. And then, that way, he's doing a symbolic Kriya without actually doing what would be the mitzvah of Kriya, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, and Shmuel follows that. Such a thing is not considered Kriya, and nevertheless, with that, he's showing his grief for his relative passing away without being over on the mitzvah. So Shmuel explains that the milamata of our Mishnah means that, rather than the bottom edge. Meanwhile, again, Rav is saying that nothing of the sort. Just means that he tears the bottom edge. He tears at the bottom edge, and that's that. Usually, when we have a machlokas like this in matters of Issur v'Heter, things that are not dinim mominus, the halacha is usually like Rav, and so it is over here that the Rambam paskens like Rav that the Kohen Gadol tears at the bottom end. And by the way, there's a sikha where the Rebbe talks about, in a different context, you find as far as Vayakam Melech Chodosh, that Rav and Shmuel disagree whether it means literally a new king, or whether it means a king with new Xeris, and the Rebbe points out a number of other places where we find the same kind of thing, that one of them, so there the Gemara says Rav and Shmuel, one says, but we often find that one of them just goes, it points to the simple meaning of the word, so here, lo yifrim, he shouldn't tear, means he shouldn't tear, period. Or rather, it's not so much the pasuk over here, but the Mishnah. When the Mishnah is saying lamata, does it literally mean what we would translate as below, meaning the bottom hem, or does it mean lamata just means lower down, but not all the way down? Fine. Now the Mishnah is going to start talking about a point of which comes first. So now, when we have, throughout this Masechta, we've been talking about the power of Helam Dabar Shel Tzibur, we've also been talking about the power of the Kohen Gadol. So, what happens if both of them have to be offered? What happens if Sanhedrin made a mistake in Halacha and the people followed them, so the power of Helam Dabar, and at the same time, the Kohen Gadol made a mistake in Halacha and followed it, and has to bring his own power, as we learned a few blocks ago, you could have the situation where the Kohen Gadol's where the Kohen Gadol's mistake is a whole different area of halacha than the Sanhedrin. So for example, we said the Sanhedrin might have paskin wrongly about chaylev, and the Kohen Gadol paskin about dam, where there's no question. Then we discuss what happens if there are two types of chaylev. Is he covered by them? But when there are two different things, chaylev and dam respectively, there's no question that he brings his own carbon. So the Mishnah says, here's a general rule. We're going to learn when Masechta Zvachim, Mes Hashem, there's going to be a whole perek that deals with this, with these matters in more details. Kol ha-todr mechaveri, whenever something is more common and happens more often than the other one, kodem mechaveri, then it comes ahead of the other one. So, for example, the Korban Tamid before other Korbanos. We'll see examples of them in the Gemara. And again, you have in Zvachim, it talks about it in much more detail. Anything that's holier than something else also comes before something else. What about if you have Todur versus Kodim? So we'll see in some detail in the Gemara over here. And again, there's going to be a lot more of it in a few months, Beth Hashem. So, for example, the Mishnah says, par, so now here's an example of precedence, par ha-mashiach, kodim par ha-eda, sorry, I skipped the line, par ha-mashiach par ha-eda omnim, suppose that you have right now the par of the kodim mashiach and the par of the community is there, then par ha-mashiach, kodim par ha-eda, b'chol ma'isav, first we do all the actions of the par ha-mashiach and finish with that, and only then do we start on the par ha-eda, for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, "Menahani mili." Where do we know this point about Todir and about Todir first and Mekodesh first? Amar Abaya, do Amar Shra, because the pasuk says, "Milvad olas haberker asher lo olas atomid." The pasuk says that you should bring the that you bring the musafim that you bring the musafim on Rosh Chodesh in each of the Yom Tovim. This particular pasuk over here is talking about doing Pesach. So you bring the musaf besides for the oila of the morning, which is the oila of the tamid. So lomali, so why do we need to say that? Mechti ksiv, it already says, oilas haboker, if it says the oila of the morning, we know them. Oila of the morning is the oilas atamid. Oilas atamid lomali, so why does it need to add the words oilas atamid? The answer is, hachi kama rachmana, because the pasuk wants you to know, called tzira kodma, because it means that anything which is more common comes first. In other words, the Torah is telling you, why is the oilas haboker coming before the musaf, is because it's more todir, because it's brought every day, whereas the current musaf is brought only occasionally. So that's where we learn this concept of kol ha-todir. The Mishnah continues, "V'cholam kodesh mechaveru kodesh chaveru." Also, when something is holier than something else, then it comes first. So menolam, where do we know that from? So tonadvei Rabbi Shmuel, we learn in a brisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, when the pasuk says v'kidashto, you should make the kohen holy. That means v'chol davar shebekdusha, that you make him holy as far as any matter of kedusha. Liftoyach rishon, he's the first one to open and read from the Torah. He gets the first aliyah. Olavorich Rishon, he's the first one to bench when it comes to making a mezuman. He's the one to preferentially to lead the mezuman. So in many of these cases, you have in principle Talmud Chacham outranks an Amoritz. We're going to learn about that later on, and we're going to learn about that further on your Gimel and Aleph. Nevertheless, though, for example, when it comes to Aliyah and Shul, we don't do that. The Kohen always gets the first Aliyah, even if he's an Amoritz. Here also, the Be'er Sheva points out, for example, as far as having the Kohen lead benching. I mean, if there's a Yisrael, there was a greater Talmud Chacham. In principle, you don't have to give the Kohen, but in practice, you often do that anyway. So the Kohen is the first one to lead benching. In other places, it's explained also that Levorech Rishon means that he should be the one to make the Bracha HaMotzi first. Velito Mona Yofer Rishon, and to get a good portion first. If he and Yisrael have something to divide, then they divide it, and then the Yisrael is supposed to give the Kohen the first choice, of which one to take. So therefore, we see that the Kohen comes ahead of the Yisrael, so that gives us a precedent for the concept of whichever one is more Mekodesh comes first. There is quite a bit of discussion, halacha, about many different angles of this, when we apply this, and when we apply this, what happens, for example, here, to take one example, what happens if Todir is going to override the other one entirely? So then we don't necessarily say that. So let's say, for example, the Magen Avraham talks about that in connection with certain haftaras overriding one another, or things like that. You know, there are many, many dinim that come up in this regard. You also have a concept, after all, in ma'avir na mitzvah. You're not supposed to pass by a mitzvah that you have available to you. So does that mean if you have the mitzvah available to you right now, you should delay it because of the todir? So there's a lot of different angles on these kinds of things. So the Mishnah had said, par koyin mashiach. Upar Eda. We said if you have the power Kohen Mashiach and the power of the Eda, then we take care of the power Kohen Mashiach first. So, Menohani Mili, where do we know that from? So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says about the power Helam Davashot Sibur, it says, Vesaraf Oisai Kasha Saraf Esa Por Harishain. It says, that he should burn it like he burnt the first pyre. The first pyre being the pyre Kohen Mashiach. In the Torah, here in Ar Masechta, we had an order. First we had the pyre Helam Dovash Tzibur, and then we had the pyre Kohen Mashiach. But in the Torah, it's actually the other way around. First it lifts the pyre Kohen Mashiach and tells all the details. Then it says about the pyre Helam Dovash Tzibur, and it finishes off saying that he should burn it like he burnt the first pyre. So Ma Tamud Lomar. So why does it need Ma Tamud Lomar Harishon? Why does it need to say Harishon? It means Shehei Rishon Kodem Para Eda B'chol Ma'aseh. It teaches us that that one comes first, comes ahead of the Para Eda as far as everything that is done, because it calls the one of the Kohen God of Rishon. So Rashi, in other words, explains the point is that the whole pasuk for Sarach, Oisei Kasha Sarach Eta Par HaRishon is extra. Because we know already from the previous pasuk that says that he should burn it. So the Be'er Sheva says we're really talking about more, and then the Tosfos HaRosh say it's more that we're learning from the fact that it says HaRishon, and from the fact that it can say different expressions such as Paroi. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Par Mashiach Par HaEda Oimnim, if you have the par of the Kohen Mashiach and the par and the power of Kohen Mashiach comes before the para eda as far as everything. The reason why is it's not just based, not just Xeris HaKosev because it says Harishon or because the whole pasuk is extra or whatever. There's a logical reason behind it. Because the Kohen Mashiach is the one who accomplishes the kapara. He's the one who does the avoida of the power Helam Davash Tzibur. And the congregation is going to get the kapara through that. Dinu shiyachtim amachaper lamaskaper. It's only logical that the one who himself is going to accomplish the kapara is going to go before. It has to have his korban work to clean up his avera before he does on behalf of others. So in other words, how could he be machaper on them when he himself is guilty of some avera that? Because of the Helam Dover and the Shigas Maisa and all that makes him chayv and a korban. So therefore we have to have his korban go first. So his avera is cleaned up, and only then logically can he be bringing a korban on behalf of everybody else. We find a similar thing by Yom Kippur. He should atone for himself and for his family and for all of the congregation of the Jewish people. So first he has to be mechaper for himself and then for everybody else, which is why we have, when it comes to the power of Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, he makes two viduyim on it. The first one for himself and his immediate family, and the second one for himself and all his fellow Kohenim. And later on, much later in the Avodah, when it comes to the Sur Lashem when he does the video on behalf of the whole Jewish people, then he can do that after he's cleaned up the Averis of himself and his fellow Kohenim. So we see this concept that it has to be first that he does his own kapara, and therefore that's a reason for the power of Kohen Gadol to be first. So the Be'er Sheva actually wants to say that this Braisa disagrees with the previous one. He learned this concept from a pasuk. This one is saying it's a logical thing. The Hoda Gavra says that no, not necessarily. You may need two things: one to teach that you should start it first, and the other one to say that you should finish it first. Otherwise, you would have thought maybe you have to shech the power Kohen Gadol first and sprinkle the blood first, but not necessarily finish off with taking it outside the machna and burning it and all that. The second pasuk tells us that also is done before we even start with the power Helam Davar Shal Tzibur. Okay. Next, the Gemara continues. Par helam davar shal tzibur. The Braisa continues. Par helam davar shal tzibur. Kodim l'par shal avodas v'chavim. Suppose that there are two korbanos that have to be brought on behalf of the tzibur for their avodas. One for a regular avodah, such as chelav or Shabbos or what have you, and the other one for that they mistakenly worshipped avodah zarah. So then, the power helam davar shal tzibur comes before the power of avodas. Kodim l'par shal avodas v'chavim comes before the power of avodah zarah. My timer, why is that? The reason is, v'hai chatas, v'hai oila. The reason is because the one for any other mitzvah, for chelev, or Shabbos, or arayas, or whatever, is a chatas, v'hai, whereas the one for avodah zarah, even though it's the same kind of animal, a par, oila. It's a korban oila. And we always have the din that a chatas comes before an oila. V'tanya, because we learn in a braisa. And Pasuk says, talks about a korban olah v'yored. One type of korban olah v'yored that we've learned, as we learned before, is when you have the person is medium poor, but not desperately poor. So he doesn't bring an animal because he can't afford it, but he doesn't bring a korban mincha. Instead, he brings the in-between thing, two birds, one for a chatas and one for an olah. And the Pasuk says, v'yikriv es ha-shalah chatas rishona. The kohen should offer the one that's for the chatas first. Now, matam adloima. Now, what is the pasuk telling us by that? Im lalamet shekei chatas rishona. Does it just mean exactly what it sounds like? We have to do the chatas first. Harek vanema. That the chatas should be first. Harek vanema. That's a sheni yasa oyle kamishbat. It says the next pasuk continues that two pasukim later. It says that the second one should be brought as an oyle according to the rules. So therefore, so we know already the second one is an oyle. There was no reason for it to say that the first one is a chatas. Ela zeb bona av, so it means we have a binyan av from here. She will call chatoris kodmas for oilas, that always a chatas goes together, goes before the oila that goes together with it. The kaimalon, and we know that the rule goes so far as even that to the chatas oif kodmas for oilas behema. Suppose you have a person is bringing a chatas of a bird and an oila of an animal. An animal usually comes before a bird in Zvachim, where it talks about over there about the rules of Todur and Mekodesh, you have there, it talks about that generally speaking, other things being equal, animal korbanos come before bird korbanos. But here, when it's chatas versus ola, it's not like that. And even a bird chatas, even though it's only a bird, comes ahead of an ola of an animal. So that being the case, then the chatas. So now the par helam davar shel tzibur, which is a chatas, comes ahead of the par for avodah zarah, which is an ola. Okay. Then the Gemara continues, the Braisa continues, par avodas kachavim kodim l'sor, avodas kachavim. Now when the tzibur made a mistake in avodah zarah, based in paskin for them, let's say, like we learned previously, they paskin for them wrongly, that a certain kind of bowing to avodah zarah is mutter, and most of the people followed it. So then, instead of all this time in Masechta, we've been focusing on that you have a par helam davar shel tzibur, and it's a chatas. In the case of avodah zarah, you have a par for a chatas, and you have a sor for an oila. Those are the Purim and Yisrofim, Mosirim and Yisrofim. So then, when you have the Pyre and the Sur for Avodah Zarah, the Pyre comes before the Sur. So the Ma'as Amai, why? High Chatas v'Hai Ola. One, the Pyre is an Ola, and the Sur is a Chatas, and we just said that a Chatas always comes before an Ola. So the Sur ought to come first. The answer is Amrib Ma Rava, Mashmei the Rava Bar Mori. In the West, in Eretz Yisrael, they said in the name of Rava Bar Mori, this is an exception to the rule. Because chatas avodah zarah chasira, because the chasira aleph, because the chatas avodah zarah is missing a letter. L'chatos ksiv. When it says, when it describes how you have to bring it for a chatas, the word chatos over there is missing the aleph. The aleph is silent, to be sure, but nevertheless, usually it's written over there. Here it's not. So that tells us that this chatas is different than a regular chatas, and it's brought after its accompanying oila. So that's one reason why in that case the Ola should come first. There is an explanation, I don't remember now the source of it, that says basically the reason is because when it's Avodah Zarah, the Tzibur becomes almost they become almost like Goyim, Rahman al-Flan, and then Goyim can bring only Ola, so there we have to bring the Ola first, like so to speak, to get them back into being Jews in good standing, and then they can bring a Chatas. I once saw such an explanation, I don't remember the source of it. Rava Amar, Rava says a different reason. Kamishbat Ksivei. Here it says that they have to be brought Kamishbat according to the rule, which means according to the actual order that it says in the Psukim. The Pasuk lists the power before the Sur, therefore the power has to be brought first, even though that would break the usual order. Okay. More precedences, the Braisa says, Sur, Avodas Kachavim, Kodim L'Sur Nosi. Suppose they have to bring the sur for Avodah Zarah, which we're saying is a chatas, comes ahead of the sur that's brought by Nasi for his Averis. So my timer, why is that? Haitzi, the Gemara interjects, Haitzibur, Baha Yochid, because one's for a tzibur, the other's for Yochid, so therefore the tzibur has to come first. Next, the Braita continues, sur Nasi kodim l'seiras Yochid, the male goat brought by... The sire of the Nasi comes before the Seira, the female goat brought by a Yochid for his Aveis. My time, and the Gemara interjects, why? Hi, Melech, Hi, Hedyet, because one's a king and one's a commoner, and the king comes first. Next, Seiras Yochid Kedemas Akivsas Yochid. Suppose that you have two people are coming to bring a chatas. One is bringing a goat, the other one is bringing a sheep. The goat comes first. So the Gemara asks why. V'atanya Kivsas Yochid Kedemas Seiras Yochid. Another Braisa says that the sheep comes before the goat. And the Gemara says, I'm going to buy Tanoi. It's Akhtakar Machalakas Tanoi. Mar Sova Seira Adifa. One opinion holds that the goat is more important. Shekin Nisramsa Eitzalabaris Kachav Miyachid. Because we find a case where a person can bring only a goat for a Yachid, namely where he worshipped Avodah Zarah B'Shegin. Any other Avera that makes a person Chayav Chatas, Chelev, Dam, Shabbos, Arayas, etc., all of them he has his choice of a female sheep or a female goat. If he worshipped Avodah Zarah B'Shegin, his only choice is to bring a male, is to bring a female goat. Therefore, the one Tana holds that the goat always takes precedence because there's more options when that is brought. Or Mar Sava, whereas the other one holds Kivsa Adifa, that the female sheep is more important, and therefore you have Reuven comes with his sheep and Shimon comes with his goat. Then we should bring the sheep first, says the second opinion, Shekin Yisrab Seba'alya, because the sheep, unlike the goat, has more emurim that are brought from it. A sheep, you bring the tail, the fat tail of it, is also offered on the Mizbeach, whereas a goat is not. Okay, so you have different opinions, which ones comes first, a sheep or a goat. Next. Omer Kodim Lakedas HaBo'imai. The Korban HaOmer, the actual barley flour of the Omer, is offered before the sheep that comes with it. When you bring the Korban HaOmer, you bring a number of animal korbanos with it, including a sheep for an oila. So the Omer itself is brought before the sheep. Similarly, on Shavuos, when they offer the Shtei Alechem, they offer a number of korbanos together with them, including two sheep for Shalmei Tzibur. So then also the Shtei Alechem are offered first before the Kvasim. The Shtei Alechem actually are not offered on the Mizbeach, to be sure. They're Chometz. Chometz is never offered on the Mizbeach, but it means in other words they're offered, they're waved together with the sheep, but then after that, the rest of whatever has to be done with them is dealt with before we deal with the sheep. Zehaklal, the general rule is called Dabra Abba Begin Mayom, anything that comes because of the day itself. The Omer is required to be brought on the 16th of Nisan. The Shtei Alechem is required to be brought on Shavuos. Kodim L'davar Abba Begin Lechem, that comes ahead of something that comes because of the bread. So the Omer itself is being brought. And because the Omer shouldn't be by itself, it's brought together with animals, but therefore the animals are considered are secondary to the Omer. And similarly with the Shtei Alechem and the animals that come with it. So again, here we have only a very brief, here we didn't really get into the details of all these cases of Todir and Mekudosh. The Gemara in Zvachim, the 9th or 10th Perek, I don't remember what number Perek it is, deals with all these dinim in much greater detail. Okay. Now let's talk about precedence among people. The Mishnah says, "Ha'ish kodim le'isha la'hachias la'hoshev aveda." A man comes ahead of a woman when it comes to save their life or to return a lost object. And that meaning, in other words, obviously every year's life is precious. But let's say, for example, you have two people over there at the same time whose lives have to be saved, and you can only do one of them. Which one should you do? Should you do first? So the Mishnah says the man first, because the man has more mitzvahs, basically, or la'hoshev aveda, and as far as returning his lost object. So there are things, by the way, for example, when Hatzolah was founded, they had a ton of questions to ask Rav Moshe on various details of how Hatzolah should operate. So Rav Moshe actually has a tshuva about it. He says, you know, in practice, it's a little hard to tell Hatzolah to follow these rules over here. You know, you have to, for one thing, anyway, you first have to go to the first call that comes first. But you have the question, what about if one of them is more seriously ill, et cetera? Really, he ends up saying it's more going to depend on what the EMTs and the doctors are going to be able to do and which one they're going to be able to get to faster, and not necessarily to follow the actual rules that it says here in the Mishnah. Anyway. So the Mishnah says that a man comes ahead of a woman to keep him alive and to return lost object. On the other hand, a woman comes ahead of a man as far as clothing. We have two poor people over here, a man and a woman, who both need clothing. We give the woman first. Olahotim, Beis HaShvi, and also to get her out of jail, out of captivity. In the case of the woman, because she's suffering greater humiliation by not having proper clothing, and in the case of captivity, because we're more afraid that, they're going to rape her. However, if both of them are in danger of rape, or ish kodim leisha, then the man comes first, because for him it's completely unnatural. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Hoya huv oviv rabbi b'shvi. What happens if a person himself and his father and his rebbe were all in captivity? So now let's say he has enough money to be able to get one, to be able to buy the freedom of one of them. Which one comes first? Hu kodim l'rabbi. He comes ahead of his rebbe, because chayecha kodmin, his own life comes first. V'rabbi kodim l'oviv, and his rebbe comes ahead of his father. So now the next one that he's able to raise money would be that he redeems his rebbe from jail, because the Gemara explains in Bava Metzia, because the Mishnah explains over there, because his father brought him into Olam Hazeh, his rebbe brings him to Olam Haba by teaching him Torah. The Gemara deals over there with, we're talking about primarily his Rabbi Muvhak, the Rabbi who taught him most of his Torah, and there the Gemara goes into a little bit of detail about it, but here the Gemara doesn't go into that level of detail. By the way, the Be'er Sheva also brings from Sefer Chassidim that if the Melamed was paid a salary to teach him, then the father comes first, because the father, after all, pays the salary. The Be'er Sheva says, you know, the Sefer Chassidim says this, but the Poskim don't seem to make that distinction. That Amor does actually bring it to halacha there. Anyway, it continues the Braisa. What about if they have also their mothers, his mother is there as well, then she comes ahead of all of them, even himself, because again, there's the concern that she might be raped by the goyim. Continues the Braisa. Chacham kodim l'malach Yisrael. Similarly, if we have a choice of being able to save, being able to free from captivity or whatever, you have a chacham and you have the king of the Jewish people, the Chacham comes first, because Chacham Shemes Ein Lanu Chayotzei. When a Talmid Chacham passes away, we're going to have nobody who of his caliber. Not everybody is capable of the Chachma of Torah. As opposed to Melech Yisrael Shemes, but when the Melech Yisrael dies, Ko Yisrael, Ru'im Malchus, all Jews in principle could be Melachim. To be sure, you have Malchus based David, but there were also in different periods of time that you had Malachim from other, you had kings from other Shvatim as well, the Aseres HaShvatim, so therefore in principle Malchus is more replaceable than a Chacham, where a Chacham, his Torah is unique, and not everybody else is going to be able to equal what he accomplished. The Rambam actually says on this Mishnah, what we mean is we have to understand, we have to believe and know that the Chacham is more effective for the people than even the king. When it comes to Maisa Rapoyal, then you really have that the king comes first. Same to Tosam Alach HaMelech, you have to have respect for him, even the Chacham has to show him respect. Next, Melech Kodim LeKohen Gadol. If you have a choice between saving the king and saving the Kohen Gadol, the king goes first. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, when it comes to anointing Shloima as king and appointing him as king, when David was still alive, Vayomer HaMelech Elohem, or Lahem, it actually says in the Pasuk, the king says to them, Chui Machem Oime Avdei Adonechem Vayomer, take from among you, Es Avdei Adonechem, is how it says in the Pasuk, take along with you your master's servants, meaning my servants, my ministers, and bring Shloima and anoint him. But the Pasuk lists them in order. Or rather, so what it is, the king gives orders to the Kohen Gadol and to the other people with him and tells them to take Shloima. So since the king is giving orders to the Kohen Gadol, then and calls himself Adonechem, your master, that means that he precedes them as far as saving lives and as far as returning a lost object and whatever. Next, Kohen Gadol Kodim L'Navi. The Kohen Gadol comes before the Navi based on the same Pasuk. Shenema, because the Pasuk continues, Moshach Oseh Shom Tzadik HaKohen V'Nosan HaNavi. Tzadik HaKohen, it was the Kohen Gadol, and Nosan HaNavi should anoint Shloima as king. So therefore, Hiktim Tzadik L'Nosan, so we see that Tzadik is placed before Nosan. V'Omer, and we have, it's not only in that example, we have another example in the Pasuk. Shema No Yeshua HaKohen, they have in the Haftarah of the first Shabbat of Parshas Baal Oischa, and the first Shabbos of Chanukah, and the Nevuah of Zechariah about the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. So he says, Shema na Yeshua Kohen Gadol, after Vareecha V'Gemer, listen now, Yeshua Kohen Gadol, he's the first Kohen Gadol in the second Beis Hamikdash, you and your friends with you. The friends are Hanani Mishal, the friends are Chagai Zechariah Malachi. and were telling him, listen, were telling him and then them. So we see that he goes first. Yochel had Yoikas on you. So you would think, wait a minute, that doesn't prove anything. Maybe his friends were just commoners. No, Talmud Lomar, the pasuk continues about those friends, ki anshei moifes hema. They are people of moifes. They're people of wonder. In Moifas al Navi, the word Moifas here refers to a Navi. Shenema, as we find the Torah tells us, V'nasan elecha oisei Moifas. Suppose you have a person who comes and says that he's a Navi, and he brings you an oisei Moifas, various kinds of nisim, and claims that he's a true Navi, and then tells you to worship Avodah Zarah, then you know he's a false Navi. So the same way in our pasuk, Anshei Moifas means people who have Nevuah. So they have Nevuah, and nevertheless, though, he outranks them. Nevertheless, though, he outranks them by virtue of his being Kohen Gadol. So we learn that from that pasuk. The Rosh explains why we needed a proof for it. We see that Yeshua ben Nun was a Navi, had to ask Elazar, a Kohen, for the Urim V'Tumim. What about the Kohen for the Kohen Gadol doesn't have the Urim V'Tumim? So the answer is Yeshua, Kohen Gadol, didn't have the Urim V'Tumim, and yet he goes ahead of the Navim. That's how the Rosh explains the need for two pasukim. Next, Mashuach b'shemen ha-mishcha, kodim l'meruba b'godim. We learned before you have the two different kinds of Kohen Gadol, the one who was anointed with Shemen HaMishcha, and the one after the Shemen HaMishcha was hidden away, where from then on Kohenim Gadolim are appointed by putting on the extra clothing. So if you have two of them around, a Kohen Mashuach, a Kohen Mashiach, and a Kohen Meruba b'godim, then the one who was anointed with Shemen HaMishcha comes first. How do you have such a thing? On the face of it, how could that be possible? Well, you'd only have a Meruba B'Godim after the Kohen Mashiach passed away. So the Rosh explains, let's say, for example, the Kohen Gadol was sick or went out of the country for a long time, and now they had to appoint a new one. It's already after the Shemen HaMishcha was hidden away, so he was Meruba B'Godim much, much later, the original Kohen returned, and now, when do we say that the original Kohen Gadol would get his job back? Would be if it was a temporary thing, it was a one-day thing, it was a seven-day thing, or whatever, that he was Tomei, not like this where he was away for a considerable amount of time. So now you're actually going to have two Kohenim Gadolim, one Mashuach B'Shemen HaMishcha, and the other one Meruba B'Godim. So then we're saying the Mashiach comes first because he was anointed with the holy Shemen HaMishcha. Next. Meruba B'Godim Kodim Mashiach Sha'ava Machmas Kiryai. On the other hand, the one who is Meruba B'Godim comes ahead of a Kohen Mashiach who temporarily had to step down because of Keri or because of other some temporary trauma like that. Because after all, the Meruba B'Godim can do the Avodah, the one who is Tomei Trumas Keri or whatever cannot, so therefore he takes precedence if at that point, during that time, when the substitute is serving as Kohen Gadol and the other one temporarily stepped down, if during that time you have a situation where their lives are in danger, then the Meruba B'Godim would come first. Next, Moshe, but again, like the Rosh said, it's one thing if, on the other hand, the Kohen Gadol was out of office for a considerable amount of time, then it would be different. Next, Mashiach she'ova machmas kiriya kodem lo'ova machmas mumay. If a Kohen Gadol, who was anointed with Shemen HaMishcha, had to leave the Kohen Gadolah temporarily because he was Baal Keri, he comes ahead in saving his life and whatever to a Kohen Gadol who had to leave because of a mum. Because of a mum, he's not likely to resume his office, whereas Keri, he will resume it very shortly. Next, over machmas mumay, kodem mashuach mochama, the one who had to leave office because of a mum, comes ahead of the Kohen Mashuach mochama. The Mashiach Mohammed is anointed specifically to make announcements before the war, as it lists in Parashat Shoftim, but his Kedusha is less than the Kedusha of the Kohen Gadol. Because the Kohen Gadol, at least at one point, did the Avodah, or now does the Avodah, being Meruba B'Godim. The Mashiach Mohammed doesn't actually, in particular, if they leave office, the Kohen Mashiach Mohammed loses his position entirely, whereas the Kohen Gadol still has the Kedusha that he had before. Next, Mashuach Mochama Kodim Musgan. The Kohen Mashuach Mochama comes ahead of the deputy Kohen Gadol, because the Mashuach B'Shemen HaMishcha is at least anointed with Shemen HaMishcha. The deputy Kohen Gadol, as important as he is, as much as he's the Kohen Gadol's right-hand man, and eventually he may even succeed to the office when the Kohen Gadol passes away, the fact remains, and he's his substitute on Yom Kippur if necessary, the fact is right now he wasn't anointed with Shemen HaMishcha. Next, Sgan Kodim La Amarkol, the Sgan Kohen Gadol comes ahead of the Amarkol. So the Gemara interjects, my Amarko, what is an Amarko? And the answer is, Omer of Chista, Omar Koila. He's the one, he says everything. He's in charge. He's in charge of everything. Meaning, in other words, you had within the Beis Mikdash, you had the, you know, there was a lot of there was a lot of day to day activity and a lot of finances and all that had to be dealt with for the Beis Mikdash. So you had, there was a hierarchy of officials who are in charge of the finances and the treasuries and the day to day operations of the Beis Mikdash. The highest level among them was called the Amarko. So they had a few Amarkolins, and now the Amarko is the next lowest rank below the Sagan. Amarko Kodim LeGizbar, in turn he comes ahead of the Gizbar, who is the actual, the treasurer of the Beis Mikdash, so the Amarko is his boss, so he comes before him in saving his life, etc. Gizbar Kodim LeRosh Mishmar, the Gizbar would come ahead of the Kohen who's in charge of an entire Mishmar. Each of the 24 Mishmaris had somebody in charge of that Mishmar. So the Gizbar, the treasurer of the Beis Mikdash, one of the treasurers would go ahead of him. Rosh Mishmar Kodim L'Rosh Beis Av, the head of the Mishmar in turn comes ahead of the Beis Av. Each Mishmar was divided into a number of Batei Av, with the idea being that, so each Mishmar was on duty in the Beis Mikdash 1 week. Then within that Mishmar, they would have one, this base of serves on Sunday, that base of on Monday, etc. of that week. So again, each base of had somebody in charge of it, in charge of making sure that people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. So the Rosh Mishmar comes ahead of the Rosh Beis Av. Rosh Beis Av, Kohen L'Kohen Hedyot, and the Rosh Beis Av comes ahead of any regular Kohen. Okay. So that's the entire hierarchy among the Kohenim themselves. So the Gemara asks the Boyle who, so now we have the question. We said that the Mashuach Mochama comes ahead of the Sagan. But what about the Inyan Tumah? What about, suppose you have a Mes Mitzvah who needs to be buried, and somebody is going to have to become Tomei doing so? Which one, the Sgan of Mashuach Mochama, Eiz Mehem Kodim, suppose the only ones available are the Sgan, the deputy Kohen Gadol, and the Mashuach Mochama, which one should come first, which one should be the one to override his Kedusha of his Kahuna, and be Matami Mes to bury this Mes Mitzvah? So the Gemara says, Omer Mazutra, Rejer of Nachman, Toshma, Akam, we'll bring a proof. The Tanya, Braisa says, Sgan and Mashuach Mochama, Shrei Mahalchem Baderach, if the Sgan and Mashuach Mochama are walking on the road, a Pogam Behem Mes Mitzvah, and they encounter a Mes Mitzvah, Mutav Shiitam, Mashuach Mochama, value time is Sgan. Better let the Mashuach Mochama become Tomei rather than a Sgan. And the reason is, Shi'im Yerabe Psul, the Kohen Gadol, Nichnas a Sgan, Mashamash Tachtav, because the Sgan is there, is supposed to be there, in case the Kohen Gadol becomes Psul, and then the Sgan will take over, so as much as possible, he needs to remain Tahar. Otherwise, if he becomes Tomei, and then shortly after that, the Kohen Gadol becomes Tomei, then it defeats the whole purpose of having a Sgan. So the Mashuach Mochama, so we see that in that case, even though we're saying the Mashuach Mochama outranks the Sgan as far as saving his life, but when it comes to Tumah, it's the other way around, the Sgan outranks the Mashuach Mochama. So the Gemara asks, V'altanya Mashuach Mochama Kodim L'Sgan, we have another, we just said before in the Braisa that the Mashuach Mochama comes first. And the answer is, Amar Avinu, Ketanya Hilach Yosei. That earlier Braisa that listed all the different levels, the Chacham and the King and the Navi and so on and so forth. And eventually it mentions the Mashuach Mochama and the Sgan. There, the Sgan is ahead as far as keeping him alive. If you have to triage and you can only save one of them, you only have enough money to take one of them out of jail. You only have right now one life vest, let's say one life ring to save one of them who's drowning or whatever. Then you do the Sgan first. But when it comes to Tumah, we're saying that the Mashuach Mochama should be. Then the Mashuach Mochama comes first, but when it comes to Tumah, we want the Mashuach Mochama to become Tomei rather than the Sgan, because again, the Sgan's whole purpose is supposed to be to substitute for the Kohen Gadol when necessary. Okay. So far we talked about, we've talked about several levels of precedence among Jews, which again, we got into this by way of talking about the level of the precedence between the power Kohen Gadol versus the power of the Tzibur. So now, more on this topic of precedence between people. The Mishnah says, Kohen Kodim LeLevi, a Kohen comes ahead of a Levi. Again, if you have, let's say, for example, two poor people, one a Kohen and one a Levi, then you give to the Kohen first. Levi l'Yisrael, a Levi outranks Yisrael, Yisrael l'Mamzer, or Mamzer l'Nosin, a Mamzer comes ahead of a Nosin, which is a descendant of the Givonim, the nation of the seven nations of Canaan, who tricked Yeshua and the people into thinking that they were for a faraway country, and they made a peace treaty with them. When they found out how they had been tricked, then Yeshua told them, you need to be from now on chot ve'etzim v'shoyev emayim, water drawers and wood choppers for the Beis HaMikdash. So they lived among the Jewish people, and they continued to do that from generation to generation. They're not allowed to intermarry into the greater body of the Jewish people. Rashi and Tosfos elsewhere discuss whether that's Daraisa or Darabanan, but in any case, they are in rank below the Mamzerim. It's actually in this week's parasha. Yeah, we begin after Mitzvah Mayim Kochem, and it mentions Choyte Vetzecha and Shoyev Memecha. Rashi brings there that actually they had the same kind of thing, the same way as they did in the times of Yeshua. They had already pulled the same kind of scam in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, and they also, those people were also made into Choyte Vetzim Shoyev Memayim, and those are the ones who Moshe is referring to in this parasha. Mamzer comes ahead of a Nosin for reasons that we're going to explain in the Gemara. The Nosin Lager, a Nosin comes ahead of a Ger, a regular Ger. The Ger Kodim La'Evan Meshuffer, a Ger comes ahead of a freed slave, a freed Eved Kanani, who now becomes a full-fledged Yid when he's freed. And the Mishnah finishes off, Amasai, when is all this applying? Bizman Shekulam Shavim, when all of them are on an equal level, when the Kohen and the Levi, or the Levi and the Yisrael, etc., are on an equal level of knowledge of Torah, then we break the tie by these kinds of things. Kohen ahead of Levi, Levi instead of ahead of Yisrael, etc. Avlim, hoya mamzer tamen chacham, a kohen gadol amaoretz. But if you have a tamen chacham who's a mamzer, and you have a kohen gadol who's an amaoretz, then, as we famously know, tamen chacham, kohen mamzer tamen chacham, kohen kohen gadol amaoretz, then tamen chacham who's a mamzer comes even ahead of the kohen gadol because by virtue of being a tamen chacham, and as we said before, tamen chacham is irreplaceable. There's a story in Masechta Yoma in that connection where one time the Kohen Gadol is going home after Yom Kippur with a huge procession, as they always had after Yom Kippur, Yom Tovah Oisa, with Tzeisim Shalom and HaKodesh. So you have this huge procession of people following him with respect. Then they saw Shmai of Avtalion, the Nesiim, and they went and followed them instead because they realized that Shmai and Avtalion are greater. And you have a story over there in the Gemara of what happened when Shmai and Avtalion themselves met up with the Kohen Gadol. But the point of that story is also that, yeah, at the time, even though Shmai and Avtalion were themselves Gerim, or descendants of Gerim, nevertheless, because they were the Chachmei HaTorah, they outranked the Kohen Gadol. Okay, so let's deal with how we know all these dinim. The Gemara says, Kohen Kodim LeLevi, on what grounds does the Kohen come ahead of the Levi? Shenema, the Pasuk says, Uvnei Amram Aaron Moshe, the sons of Amram or Aaron Moshe, by Yibodol Aaron Lahakriv Lagomer, and Aaron was separated out Lahakriv to bring the Korbanos, the actual expression of Lakdishoi, or the actual Lashon of Pasuk is Lakdishoi, to make him holy, Kodesh Kodashim, that he was made holy of holies. So we see that the Kohen is more holy than the Levi. Therefore, he comes first. Levi kodem Yisrael. The Levi comes ahead of Yisrael. Shenema, as the apostle says, but Isaihi hivdol Hashem as shevet a Levi mitoch legomer. At that time of the Meiser Egel, then Hashem set aside shevet Levi to be his special shevet. So we see that shevet Levi was distinguished from among all the other shvatim, and therefore they have greater kedusha. Yisrael kodem l'mamzer. The Yisrael comes ahead of the mamzer. Why? Shazem yuchas, v'zeinim yuchas. Because the Yisrael has yuchas. He has proper lineage. He's allowed to freely intermarry among the body of the Jewish people, whereas the mamzer is not. Next, mamzer kodem l'nosin. Why does the mamzer come ahead of the nosin? Shazeba mitipa p'shera, v'zeba mitipa p'sula. Because let's consider where they come from. The mamzer at least comes from a father who is a full-fledged Yisrael. The Nosin, ultimately, his father and his grandfather and so forth, going back, come from Canaanim. So therefore, the Mamzer, even though the Mamzer cannot, neither of them can intermarry among the Jewish people. They both have to be limited to their own kind or similar kinds or whatever it talks about in Kedushin. We're currently learning about it in Yaakov, actually. But in terms of where they came from, the Mamzer at least came from a full-fledged kosher father, and the Nosin did not. Next, Nosin Kodim Lager. Why does the Nosin come ahead of the Ger? Because the Nosin at least grew up among Jews in Kedusha. He himself is a Nosin. He's part of this group that ultimately are descended from the Gibeonim, but he, not the original generation, obviously, but the following generations of Nesinim, after all, they grew up among Jews, whereas the Ger did not. He grew up as a Goy and then became a Ger. Next, Ger Kodim La'Evan Meshuchra, the Ger comes ahead to, to save his life, etc., to a freed slave. Because the difference is, the slave was he's part of what Noach had said to Canaan. Order Canaan cursed his Canaan, and Rashi says the fact that Noach couldn't find a greater curse for Canaan than calling him an Eved. So therefore, we see that any Eved, even if he's not actually descended from Canaan, is still on a lower level, still cursed compared to anybody else. So therefore, in other words, the reason why the Gemara needs to bring that is otherwise we would have said, fine, an Eved who's actually ethnically descended from Canaan, then fine. But what about other Avodim? So that's why Rashi explains, even if you have an Eved from some completely other nation, but the fact is he's still under a curse because we see that Noach considered the greatest curse possible to be a slave. Actually, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, in that case, why is the Nosim or head, the Nosim and the Sinim were also cursed by Yeshua? He said to them, Arurim Atem. But he meant mainly the ones of that generation, the ones who actually pulled the scam and claimed that they were from a faraway country, them Yeshua cursed. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, not necessarily their descendants are the Sinim. They can't intermarry into the Jewish people and have to be Choyt Ve'etim, Meshayev and Mayim, but they're not necessarily cursed. Whereas the Avodim, generation after generation, are cursed. So that explains all of these precedences. Now we said Amosab is manchukulam shoving chola. We said on the other hand renders all the supply only when they're all on an equal level, but otherwise a mamzer tamid chacham goes before a kohen gadol amaretz. So the Gemara says menahani mili. Where do we know that from? And the answer is Amar of Acha b'Rav Chanina. The Amar Kro, the pasuk says initially yikora hi mipninim. It, the Torah, is more precious than pearls. From which we learn, and the word mikpninim, we darshin, we kohen gadol, shenichas lefnai v'lefnim, the Torah is, the chokhmah of Torah, is greater than the kohen gadol, who goes in lefnai v'lefnim, who goes into the innermost chamber of the Beis Mikdash, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Nevertheless, the yukorehi, the Torah is more precious than that. One reason is, why Meforshim explain why we darshin that, is because you have a kriyuk siv over there. The pasuk over there says mipninim, but you actually have that it's written mipniyim. You have, there's a nun missing over there. First of all, Marashah says pashut. You know, you have the fact that the Torah, the pasuk continues there in Mishlei saying v'chol chafatzecha lo yishuba. Anything that you would possibly desire is not as important as the Torah. So why does he need to mention pninim? So that gives us the zirasha. But some of the Foshim also point out the word is written over there in Mishlei. The kri is mipninim. The ksiv is mipniyim. The second nun is missing. So mipniyim sounds much more like lefnim and lefnai v'lefnim. Okay. Continuing on this topic of precedence between people, Tanya Rav Shimon Yechoy. I remember we learned in a braisa that Rav Shimon Yechoy says, "Bidin hush yaktim even meshuchra leger." On the face of it, it should be logical that the freed slave should come ahead of a ger. Just like we said before about the Nosin, the Nesinim grew up among Jews, they grew up among the Kedusha of Jews, and by the way, you see from that the importance of whom you grow up among. That itself has a powerful influence on you. We're saying that the Nosin himself belongs to a group who are degraded, and they're Choyt Ve'etzim, Meshayev V'Mayim, but the fact that they grew up among Jews makes them greater than they would have otherwise been. So on the face of it, an Eved is the same thing. He grew up with us in Kedusha. He grew up among Jewish families and learned some basics of Yiddishkeit there, whereas the Ger, Zela Godolim Onim Kedusha, as opposed to the Ger did not, because usually he became a Ger as an adult. Ella, the reason why not, as we said before, Zehoi B'chval Order, Vezela Hoi B'chval Order, because the Eved was in the category of Order, the Ger never was. Okay. Speaking of this, then, speaking of the difference between different groups of Jews in terms of marriages, so the Gemara says Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, no, it doesn't say Tanya. Shalu Talmidim as Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik's Talmidim asked him, why is it, suppose you have a woman as a Giyoris, she has no problem necessarily with Shiduchin. other things being equal, as opposed to many fewer people are willing to marry a woman who was a slave woman and marry and now is freed and is a full-fledged Jewish woman to marry her. If a person has a choice between a Giyuris and a Meshachreris, he's much more likely to take the Giyuris. Why is that? They asked Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. Amalahem, he gives them the same answer. One reason is, again, because the ger was never in the category of order, whereas the shifcha meshachreres was. So even people may know that, they may not know that, and only like know it subconsciously or whatever, but therefore they feel a greater affinity towards the geirus than they do towards the shifcha meshachreres. Davar acher, another reason he tells them, zu hoisev cheskas shimur, because the geirus was during her old life when she was a goita, she probably held herself back from being promiscuous with goyim. Now lahalacha, we consider she still may have had relations with goyim and therefore she can't marry a kohen after her geirus, but nevertheless she has in mind, Rashi points out, that even before she became a geirus, she may have already many years earlier started thinking of that, and therefore she's acting in a more tzniistic way than she would than the regular run of the mill goita, and therefore people have a greater affinity to her because she's obviously a more moral person. Vizuloi hoisted the cheskas shimur, as opposed to the shivcha moshecheres, did not have that chazaka. In general, shvachos are promiscuous. That's why we have in Pirkei Avos, for example, ma'abes shvachos, ma'abes dima, and therefore, and after all, Rashi points out, she can't free herself anyway, so she has no idea whether in her lifetime she's ever going to become a shivcha moshecheres. She has no motivation to keep herself pure and to keep herself theistic in case one day I get freed and then I'm going to want to look for shidduchim. She doesn't have that motivation because not in her hands in the first place. Whereas if Giyuris thinks to herself, you know, in the back of her mind, one day I may become a Giyuris, and therefore she's gonna guard herself even now. So that's another reason. It actually gives two explanations really. One is that one reason is because shvachas are more mufkeres, and the other point is again because the reason why she's more mufkeres is because she knows she doesn't have the ability to free herself. Since we're mentioning, so now the Gemara is going to digress, having mentioned that they asked Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik a reason for a sociological thing that you find when people have a choice between a Giyuris and a Meshachreres, they're going to pick the Giyuris. Why is that? So now the Gemara digresses with similar kinds of things that Talmidim asked Rabbi Elazar about different other things that we see around us in the world and what's the reason behind them. Shalot Talmidim, Rabbi Elazar, b'nei ma'ah kelev makeres koinoi, why is it that a dog recognizes his owner and he's very loyal to his owner and will follow him wherever he goes, as opposed to a cat is not? A cat is much more standoffish towards its owner. So why is that? Amalahem, Sir Balazar answers them, Umaha oichom masha achva oichom shakeach, madach, as the Gemara is going to start telling us on Omid Beis, if a person eats from something that was bitten into by a mouse, then that causes him to be forgetful. So then a cat, ha oichol achar achva atma, alachas kama vakama, so then the cat itself, which eats mice, how much more so that it's forgetful? So the reason it's not loyal to his owner and doesn't run around him everywhere is because the cat itself eats mice, and therefore that has a bad effect on its memory. There is actually Be'er Sheva explains over here that one point is also that we find dogs, for example, we find in Mitzrayim that the dogs didn't bark, but they had a certain respect for Hashem, and Hashem rewarded them by saying we should give them the tzreif of meat. We don't find such a thing by cats. And then you also have now Ben Yehoyada points out sometimes you do. You have sometimes cats that are very loyal to their owners, and after her, so how is that? So he says, because we're saying over here, it's because they eat mice. Well, not all cats eat mice, so the ones that don't eat mice are the ones who are loyal to their owners. Okay. Next. Shal Talmidim is Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar's Talmidim also asked him, "Mipnei ma hakol moshlim ba'achbarim? Why is it that everybody dominates over mice?" And mice are like the ultimate victims. Everybody chases them. They're everybody's prey. Why is that? So he answers them, suran ra, because they have a naturally bad inclination. And Rashi says suran ra means yetsu libam rahu yosimidai. They have a natural inclination, a natural tendency that's very, very bad. In what sense? The Gemara says maihi. In what sense are mice worse than any other creature? Rava Amar, I feel a glimmy geitzi, because we see that mice chew even on clothing. not clothing. They don't even get melee. They eat food fine. You know, they're hungry, but they go and then chew on clothing. They're not even getting enough from it. And nevertheless, they chew on them just to be destructive. So therefore, that shows that they have like a naturally bad tendency. So they're not punishable for it, so to speak. But therefore, in other words, Hashem put it in the teva of nature that therefore they're hunted down by everybody. Rapapa, I'm not for the shuf samara gaiti. Rapapa says not even clothing. At least you could argue clothing is soft. They'll even chew. They'll even gnaw on the wooden handle of a spade. So even that, again, you know, it's hard. It's a bother for them kind of to bite into it and to chew it. And they still do that anyway, showing that therefore they have this natural tendency that Hashem implanted in them to be destructive. So therefore Hashem made it that also therefore they're hunted down by everybody. The idea would be, apparently, in other words, not, you know, the mice don't deserve punishment, but the idea is it's for us to learn that if a person is going to be destructive like that, then he's always going to find himself on the bad side of things. Okay. So since we mentioned about that cats eat mice and therefore they're forgetful, so there's, and we said that even if a person eats something that was chewed on by a mouse, it makes them forget. So now the Gemara talks about this kind of thing. There are five things that cause a person to forget his learning. Number one, if a person eats something that a mouse previously ate from, or something that a cat ate from, someone who eats the heart of an animal, the heart is perfectly kosher, but it causes a person to be forgetful. A person who regularly eats olives. How regularly? So there's an interesting quintus from the famous Goyen Reb Chaim Kanevsky, where he wrote an entire quintus called Sefer Zikoron, gathering to, after all, we know from Pirkei Avos, a person is not supposed to forget his learning. So when the Gemara is giving us this list of things that make a person forgetful, it's as much as to warn us, don't do these things, because you're going to end up forgetting your learning. So he wrote that the Reb Chaim wrote an entire quintus on this subject, collecting together everything from all over Chazal on this topic of remembering and forgetting. So he explains that harogel would mean if he eats them every 30 days or less. So if he eats them more often than once a month, less than once a month, says Reb Chaim, wouldn't be an issue. Further on, we're going to say that olive oil makes a person remember his learning, which is why you often have a minhag when people eat olives, they have them together with olive oil, and then that way one counteracts the other. Another one is when a person drinks water left over from bathing. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, definitely this means water that was used for bathing his body or his feet. What about water for washing his hands? If he drinks that he says he's not sure about. Next, v'harochitz raglav zua gabizu, and the last one is when a person washes his feet, placing one foot on top of the other. Now, we're actually going to learn in Masechta Zvachim in a few weeks, Bez Hashem, that the Kohenim, when they did Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim, would do just that. They would have one foot on top of the other. So a mitzvah is different. Shem a mitzvah v'yedi davar ra. But here we're talking about where a person is doing it, not for the sake of the mitzvah, then it causes them to be forgetful. The yesh oimrim, some say, another one, afa maniach kelev, tachas min ashoisev, also a person who puts his clothing under his head when he goes to sleep, then is also kosher l'shikha, it also makes him forgetful. Here also, Mephoshim talk about, you find in Mishnayos Tomid and Midos that the Kohenim would do that when they were lying down for a couple of hours during their shift in the Beis Hamikdash. When they were on guard duty, they would have rotations, and a couple of them would sleep for a little while and they would put the clothing under their head. So one possibility, it wasn't literally under their heads, it was next to it. The other possibility, again, is that Big Dikahuna are different because they're doing it for the sake of the mitzvah. They're doing it in order to be on duty in the Beis Hamikdash. And again, Shem Mitzvah L'Yedah Dabara. The Gemara is not explaining why these things are kosher l'shikha, just the fact is that they are. The Meiri, the Meiri talks about it and just says that, he explains basically that because it had these things have an effect on these things have a certain effect on the hormones or whatever in a person's body, some of these things various ways, he doesn't really explain in detail how, but the point is that they have a certain effect on him. So he says actually that many of these things, it may not be that they truly are so. Some of these things might have been things that were popular. The Meiri says some of these things might have been popular notions that these things cause a person to be forgetful, and therefore the Gemara is kind of respecting those even if there's no logical basis behind them. On the other hand, Chamishad Ranam Meshivinas Halimud, there are five things. A person does them, they restore his learning. So he forgot his learning, and for whatever reason, now these things help him restore that. Pas Pechamin, the first one is bread baked directly on the coals. V'cholshek and Pechamin Atzman, all the more so if he eats the coals themselves, is good for him. On the side over here, it has a different girsa, that pas chitim, that it's supposed to be wheat bread, and all the more so if he eats the wheat itself. A different girsa. The next one, va'ichav beitzim megogelas b'lay melach. The second one is if a person eats a soft-boiled egg without salt. Megogelas literally means rolling, because when a raw egg, you can't roll it very much. Try it. It's an easy way to tell whether an egg is raw or hard-boiled is whether it'll roll or spin freely. So now you cook it just enough that now it will actually roll freely, but not enough for it to be hard boiled. So like has a soft boiled. So without salt, that's good for your memory. V'harogel b'shemen zayis. The next one is a person who regularly eats olive oil. V'harogel b'yayin v'samim. When a person is used to, is regularly drinks wine. And it has spices. Elsewhere, you have a Gemara where Rava says, and actually Rava is going to say a few lines down over here, that wine and spices made me smarter. So that's an example of that. And another one is a person drinks the water that was left over from making dough. Some say also one who dips his finger in salt and eats it is also good for his memory. So, we said Hadrogo b'shemen zayis, the person is accustomed to eating olive oil, so that helps him restore his memory. So the Gemara says, Messiah le Rabbi Yochanan. That supports what Rabbi Yochanan says. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, k'shem sha zayis meshateach limud shol shivim shana. Just as much as olives can make a person forget his learning, even from 70 years, even a person has been learning and knows something thoroughly for 70 years, and then he eats olives, and it can cause him to forget that. So the same way, the same way olive oil helps restore that learning that he forgot 70 years ago. So that's how Rashi explains. So limud shel ayin shana would mean what he's been learning for the last 70 years, and limud shel shivim, meshiv limud shel shivim shana, meaning even something that he forgot 70 years ago. Marsha explains differently that it means that there's what he learned when he was first 70 years old, where he's not going to remember it as easily as we know from Pirkei Avos, like ink written on erased paper, where it doesn't get absorbed as easily, the same way an old person doesn't absorb new information as easily. Nevertheless, olive oil helps him retain that. Why dafka olive oil? Marsha points out, you look at the Shivas Aminim, the only one where, so it doesn't say over there olives, it says zeis shemen, it says olives of oil, because the olives themselves wouldn't be a praise for Eretz Yisrael, but the oil from it is very good, therefore it's good for him. And we said, when a person regularly has wine and spices, Masayle Rava, that supports what Rava says. Rava says wine and fragrances made me smart. So we see that those are good things that help restore a person's memory. And we said, when a person dips his finger in salt and eats it, so yesh omen, we said that's also good. So the shlokesh says, dafka when he dips one finger in the salt. So the Gemara points out to Tanoi, it's actually a machlokas Tanoim. Rabbi Yehuda omen achas v'loy shtayim. Rabbi Yehuda says, dafka one finger, not two fingers. Which finger does it mean? The Prima Godim, actually, when he brings this, discusses that does it mean dafka the index finger? Does it mean dafka the right index finger? Again, Rav Chaim in the Sefer HaZikaron says that actually there's elsewhere, when Shulchan Aruch talks about it, it actually says that what he should do is he should pinch it he should take a pinch of salt between his third and fourth fingers, and that's how he should eat it. So that's the answer, how he should do it. So Rabbi Yehuda says only one finger. Rabbi Yossi Amishtayim V'lo Shalosh. Rabbi Yossi says two fingers, dafka, not three, v'simonach k'mitza. To help remember which Tana said which, you can remember about k'mitza, when you take a koimetz of a mincha, And the fourth finger of the hand is called Kmitza for that reason, because the last finger on that side that's used to take the handful of flour for a mincha. So now you can remember, you bend down that finger, you have two fingers, two regular fingers on one side of it, and one on the other side. So that helps you remember that one Tana said, excuse me. Now, so you're not counting the thumb, because the thumb is not in the same row as the other fingers, so just count the other four fingers. So when you bend down, you commit the finger, then you have two on one side and one on the other side, and therefore that helps you remember that one Tana said one finger to eat salt with, and the other one says two fingers. Which in that case, the Rosh points out, could have also said by bending down the middle finger, same thing, when you have one on one and the other on the other. And the answer is because that one is usually bent, they meant the kmitza, because precisely the kmitza finger, the fourth finger, is so called because it's used for the mitzvah of kmitza, so therefore we wanted to mention that. Here's another example where you can bend it down, and it'll help you remember it, and it'll help you in a matter of Torah. Also, he says another reason, if we mention the middle finger, then you would say, you know what, maybe it does mean two and two, because you have two fingers on each side, counting the thumb. But now that you have the kmitza, you're not going to say, you can't very well say one and not three, so that'll help you remember that one says one and not two, and the other one says two, and the other one says two and not three. So in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions two, and it mentions that you should take a pinch of salt, that a person should take a pinch of salt between, as another point of the kmitza, I'm mentioning the kmitza finger over here, is to say that the kmitza finger is involved in picking up the salt. So that's how you do then. So you say you take a pinch of salt between those fingers, between the third and fourth fingers, and it helps your memory. And it's a good thing for you. So we'll continue tomorrow about the Shem with other things that the Gemara is going to mention that make a person forgetful. This list, by the way, that we had over here, the Chamisha Dvarim, is not exclusive. There are other things. For example, Gurin Ashas, Rabbi Akiva Eger mentions over here that the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, if a person stands in the shadow of the tower, in the shadow of what's left of the tower above, then it also makes him forgetful of his learning. So there's a whole bunch of things like that. And again, you have this Kuntras from Reb Chaim, quote, Sefer Azi Karin, that goes in great detail into all this, into all these things and various outgrowths of them.
Does the Gemara have any trick on how to increase your memory?
So you were saying not so much to increase, but you said to restore your memory. So to increase your, and so one thing we have, for example, when we mention over here, so no, the expression over here was meshiv misalim, restores a person learning. A different gears actually is yofim the Talmud, that they're good for learning, in which case it means they can even improve a person's learning. Yeah.
Okay.